Okay, so you sent in some really interesting stuff this time. We're going to be trying to understand one of the most important things about Jesus. This whole idea of him existing before he was born.
Right, yeah, pre-existence. It can seem kind of strange at first, but it really helps us understand who Jesus is. We know him as Jesus, a man born in Bethlehem, but the idea is that the Son of God, the eternal Son, already existed way before that, like forever.
So it's not just about a really long life, it's a totally different way of existing, right?
Yeah.
Which brings us to the incarnation. Like, how does that fit in?
Exactly. The incarnation is this amazing idea. The eternal Son actually took on a real human body and a soul. Not like acting, but truly becoming human, the God-man.
What's interesting to me is this whole preexistence thing is specifically about the Son, right? Like in the Trinity. What you sent over is clear that the Father and the Holy Spirit are also eternal, but it's not the same kind of preexisting as the Son.
Yeah, that's a super important point. It's like
Yeah.
the Father and the Spirit have always existed fully themselves. The Son, though, he goes through this transformation, right? He was the pre-incarnate Son, then through the incarnation, he becomes the incarnate Son. So when we talk about pre-existence here, it's really all about Christ.
Okay, so we're diving into this preexistence of the Son. And from what I'm seeing, there are two main ways to explore it. By looking at those times when the Son appears in the Old Testament before he was born, they're called Christophanies, right? And then by looking at what the New Testament says directly about it. Let's start with those Old Testament appearances.
Yeah, those Christophanies. So the Old Testament has these moments where God, who can't be seen, shows himself in visible ways. They're called theophanies, like a physical manifestation of God. And some people believe that some of these theophanies were actually the Son before he was born, like a sneak peek.
Now, this is where it gets interesting. Your source mentions that not every theophany is necessarily a Christophany, right? It brings up a hermeneutical consideration. What does that even mean?
Right. Hermeneutical consideration just means we've got to be careful not to read the Old Testament only through New Testament ideas. Just because God appeared in some form doesn't automatically mean it was Jesus, the pre-incarnate Son. But there are definite connections the New Testament itself makes.
Like that one in John 12:41. That seems to be a pretty strong connection,
Oh,
right?
yeah, for sure. John 12:41 says Isaiah saw Jesus' glory and spoke about him. It comes right after John 12:37-40, which talks about how people didn't believe in Jesus even after all the miracles he did. It's a really sad moment.
And John uses Isaiah to explain why they didn't believe. He quotes Isaiah 53 about nobody believing the message, and Isaiah 6 about God blinding people's eyes, hardening their hearts. And then he drops this bombshell saying Isaiah actually saw Jesus's glory.
It's how John connects these ideas that's so cool. The source points out this chiastic structure, like ABB. The A's are the Isaiah 53 quote about unbelief. B is that vision of God's glory in Isaiah 6. And B, Prime John 12:41, links that glory to Jesus. So John's saying that Isaiah's vision wasn't just some random appearance of God, it was the pre-incarnate Son's glory that he saw.
So the majestic Lord in Isaiah 6 wasn't just God the Father, but specifically the Son, the pre-incarnate Son, the Word, the Light. That's a huge claim. What does Isaiah 6 actually say about this vision?
Okay, Isaiah 6:1-5 paints this really vivid picture. Isaiah sees the Lord high up on a throne, his robe filling the temple. Above him are seraphim with six wings each, singing, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts." Their voices literally shake the temple, and the whole place fills with smoke. Isaiah's reaction, total humility, realizing how sinful he is in the presence of this, this overwhelming holiness. This is the Lord of hosts he's encountering, Yahweh.
And John 12 says that this Yahweh, this Lord of hosts, is actually the pre-incarnate Son. It's like John's giving us the behind-the-scenes scoop on the Old Testament, right? Showing us who Isaiah really met makes you think about those Old Testament passages in a whole new way.
Yeah, it definitely does. But we need to be clear about something here. The source makes a big point of this. It's not that Jesus had a human side before he was born. The person who became incarnate, it wasn't some human being hanging around beforehand. It was the eternal Son, who is God. He took on human nature, a body and soul in Mary. It's the Son becoming human, not a human becoming God.
Yeah, that's a really crucial difference. Okay, so we've got those Old Testament Christophanies that the New Testament points to as evidence for preexistence. Now, what about those direct New Testament teachings?
All the New Testament is chock full of them. A big one is in John 8:5659, where Jesus just comes out and says, "Before Abraham was, I am." Imagine saying that as a Jew in the first century.
That's a really bold statement. And the Jews went nuts, right? They even tried to stone him. What's so special about those words, "I am"?
Well, I am. That's a loaded phrase. Scholars all agree that it links back to how Yahweh talks about himself in Isaiah, those I am statements in the later chapters. You know, like, I am the Lord, there is no other kind of stuff. So when Jesus says, I am, he's basically saying he is that same God, that Yahweh existing before Abraham, the big daddy of Judaism, the Jewish leaders, they got it. That's why they wanted to stone him for blasphemy. They knew exactly what he was claiming. It wasn't just about being older than Abraham. It was about being God.
Oh, wow. That's direct. All right. Then there's John 1:1-3, right at the beginning. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Hard to get more pre-existent than that.
Absolutely. John starts his gospel by saying the Word, who we find out is Jesus in verse 14, the Word became flesh, was there in the beginning with God and was God. No pre-existence doubt there. Verses 9 and 10 also say the true light already existed before coming into the world.
And John the Baptist says something about this too in John 1:15. He says, he who comes after me ranks before me because he was before me. But John was actually born before Jesus, so what's going on there?
Yeah, good point. On a human timeline, John's the older one. But he's not talking about being born first. What he means is Jesus ranks before me and was before me in a different way. It's about his pre-existence, about him being the Son of God, which puts him on a higher level. Spiritual ranking, not a birthday thing.
Now, Philippians 2:5-7, that's in Paul's letters, right? That whole passage about Jesus emptying himself of the kenosis, that phrase, who, though he was in the form of God, that seems to say something about pre-existence.
Oh, totally. Though he was in the form of God, that means he existed before, as God, sharing God's very nature. Then he chooses not to hold on to that equality with God, but takes on the form of a servant, being born human. It's such a huge contrast, you know, pre-existent glory, then humble incarnation. This passage is super important for this whole two states doctrine. Jesus in his humbled state on earth, and then his exalted state in his pre-existence and after the resurrection and ascension.
Colossians 1:15-16, that's another mind-blowing one. Christ is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation, for by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible. So if he created everything, he must have existed before creation, right?
It makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. If Christ is the one who created all things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, he had to be around before all that to do the creating. This goes back to Genesis 1:1. It shows us how eternal he is and how evolved he was in creation. He's not just part of creation. He's the one who made it.
And the book of Hebrews adds to this, too. Hebrews 1:2 and 1:2 both say that God made the world through the Son. And it even quotes Psalm 102, where it says, the Son laid the foundations of the earth.
Yeah, those verses in Hebrews really drive home the point that the Son was involved in creation, which backs up the whole pre-existence idea. The author of Hebrews is basically saying God used the Son to create everything. It's another way of saying he's eternal and that he was active in making the world.
You know what I find fascinating? The early church, they were already worshiping Jesus, singing hymns to him, and baptizing people in his name, even before they had fully worked out this whole pre-existence doctrine. It's like they just knew Jesus was divine right from the start.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. They weren't worshiping some dude who was just a good teacher.
Yeah.
You know, it shows they believed he was God, and that means they understood he was more than just a guy who lived in the first century. They acted like it before they could fully explain it.
Okay, so to sum up, we've looked at how the Son's pre-existence is backed up by those Old Testament appearances the New Testament says are actually Christ, and by all those direct statements in the New Testament about him creating everything and being eternal. Pretty convincing stuff.
Absolutely. This isn't just some heady theological debate, you know. Understanding Christ's pre-existence is key to grasping the incarnation. The idea that the eternal Son, who was and is God, willingly became human to save us. It's God identifying with us in the most profound way.
Wow. That's been a lot to take in. It really changes how you read the Bible, you know. So here's something to think about. If Jesus existed in glory with the Father before anything was created, how does that change how you see his life, his death, and his resurrection? I mean, think about it. The eternal Son becoming fully human. What does that tell us about our relationship with God? Something to ponder. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.